Welcome to Real Stories, a show that has honest conversations from the heart. I invite you to sit back, relax, and allow our guests to speak their truth.
Hello, I'm Tanya the Communication Doctor, and welcome to Real Stories. I just want to say, I come from a family where people didn't always speak their truth. And I think it's so important to speak their truth. And every day I meet people who, because of society, are just walking with that facade because they feel that it is the way to be. And in Real Stories, I want people to know the real story behind the facade. And that is why I do what I do.
Hi, this is Real Stories, and I am your host, Talia the Communication Doctor. And today on my show, I have Mike Vacanti. And Mike Vacanti is the founder of Humans First and the author of Believership. Hello, Mike.
Hello, Tanya. I'm so excited to be with you today.
It's, you know, it's really exciting, and I feel like things happened in divine timing, isn't it, today?
Yes, it is. And that divine timing included some grace from you today. So I appreciate that.
Oh, brilliant. Brilliant. Thank you. And I appreciate you being here today, Mike. I just want to start off by saying, because I want to know where Vacanti comes from, first of all. That's the first thing I really want to know. Is it Italian?
It is an Italian name. My grandfather came to America from the Tuscany region, just outside of Lucca, when he was in his teens, and married an Italian woman whose family came here just before him, and moved up to St. Paul from St. Louis. So my father was a first generation immigrant, and there was Italian spoken in the home when I was a kid.
Oh, that's amazing. You know, it's really interesting because I do love that. And I was just picking up on the Vacanti, and I love Italy, and I've actually been to Tuscany. It's one of my favorite places. I absolutely think it's gorgeous. So I think if you don't ask, you don't know. So that's really lovely to know that of your roots and your heritage. And it's interesting as well, you coming from an immigrant family in America. And that's something I want to talk to you about a little bit as we go in a little bit further. But first of all, talk to us a little bit about Humans First Community, because I've been coming on the calls now of the Humans First for about, I'd say, 4 or 5 months. And I find it incredibly positive, incredibly supportive, and a really lovely community. So tell my audience a little bit more about Humans First and why Humans First.
Well, thank you. And it has been a great joy to get to know you through those weekly calls that we have, Tanya. And I think that we'll continue to discover a rhythm that will find the depths and topics that are meaningful. And it will continue to grow and evolve over time. And that's really the philosophy of Humans First. And it started in October of 2018 was the first event, a live event that we held in New York City. And we simply had 60 people in the room and asked the question, what's it like to be human in the workplace today?
Oh, beautiful.
And it's been that open-ended, Tanya, where it was an environment of discovery to create safe spaces for people to share and open up. And there's been 13 live events where people have really gone to great depths, emotional depths, told stories that, you know, they had hidden from others, from the public prior. It really has been an exploration and discovery journey to really understand what is challenging us, what's troubling us, and what are we learning that can help us all move forward? Great connection comes out of that. For me, it has been, almost research. It's been a journey of exploration. you know, through the gifts and the shares of others, Tanya, it's helped me grow rapidly, tremendously over a short period of time. So we can teach old dogs new tricks. And when we had the live event in London last September, in October, Gary Turner reached out and said, what if we do one of these weekly calls here based in the UK, the EMEA call? And watching that community develop and you know, they're people that join, everybody's invited in. There's, you know, it's a self-selected group. So everybody raises their hands, everybody's invited, many stay. And we've seen that grow and morph over time. And what I say most about humans first is it is not to be owned. It exists to be shared. And it belongs to each of us equally to ignite that passion and understanding and to learn from each other and support each other, lift each other up to grow. There's a lot of hope available to face the rapid and significant challenges that we're presented with each day along the journey.
You know what, Mike? That's really strong now. I love the fact that you said that it's not owned and it's there to be shared, because I don't know any community or group other than Humans First that has that ethos. And I think that's what makes it so powerful, because sometimes some of the problems in work or groups can come from that hierarchy. And the fact that you have a group of people together and it's not to be owned or shared and everybody is just treated as humans, I think that's just really powerful within itself. So I just wanted to share that with you. But as I move on now, I want to go on a Mike Vacanti journey today. And I want to kind of have a look at your kind of your light and shade today, because I do feel Real Stories is about looking at the light and shade in everyone, because I think that's what makes us whole. So I'm going to start with the shade, and I want to go, as Carl Jung says, to the shadow side, and I want to ask you what challenges you.
Oh, I'm going to stay in the spirit of that, right? Because you know, the work you reference with Carl Jung, and you know, the shadow is very real, Tanya. And I think it's the piece that we don't often talk about, but we live in so frequently. Mm. And over time, with my behaviors that weren't good behaviors and my mistakes that were, you know, really manifested as self-sabotage, there's so much temptation in to stay in the shade and operate in the shade, because there's some immediate rewards to that. Mm. I think a lot of the philosophy of gain and growth leads to extraction from others, extraction from our environment. I think the shady part pulls us into the temptation of taking more than we're giving. Mm. And it's rewarded. That's the tricky piece to living in the shade, is when we become self-serving like that, we can go get more for ourselves, and we end up collecting things that we don't really need. We seek to find satisfaction in having more, and we miss out on the opportunity for greater fulfillment. And I think my journey was really starting to understand that I was straddling kind of that dark and light, right? The shade and the emancipation from the shade. Mm. And at some point a choice had to be made.
Yeah.
That I could stay. I had to plant a foot. I had to bring my feet together. I need to restate that. That the chasm was too wide between them and I could no longer straddle. And it was a real choice of where am I going to put both feet and stand firmly and understand what I truly want to see happen in the world and how I want to show up and participate in that.
You know what, that's really lovely what you just said. And it's interesting because, you know, we've all got the dark and light, and it's a constant thing, isn't it? It's a constant process, isn't it? This putting as you put it, bringing two feet together so you can stand firmly, I suppose, in your positive power, which is really quite amazing. That's what I want to add there, positive power. But is there anything right now that challenges you in the world or with you?
Yeah, this pandemic has been a struggle for me.
Yeah.
It has made me realize how much joy I have when I'm with people, and actually also how much that charges my battery. And it's not a constant. It's not a constant need, but when I'm in groups of people and when I'm able to be engaged, inspiring, learning, teaching, my battery gets full, and that full battery can run for a very long time. Mm-hmm. And what I've learned about myself through these last few months is without that battery charge, I've had to seek other ways to try to keep my mental sharpness, my ambition going forward, so I can, you know, hopefully participate and create opportunities for us all to take strides into making positive change around us.
That's really powerful. There's a lot there, really, in terms of you recognizing that you need to charge your battery that for that long time, so you know you can maintain it and keep going, and you can keep this positive energy and keep sending it out. But it must be a huge effort to do so, in a positive effort, of course, but to keep doing this. So I want to know what's behind that. I want to know the whys. I want to know what uplifts you.
Yeah. <It's>, I laugh at that because, you know, there's a real answer, and the real answer came to my mind first, and I will share that. What has been amazing to me is, and I'm realizing this more and more, Tanya, and now I seek those moments that I think are the greatest moments of life, is when... So I can be a pretty tough guy, really, right? So I'm like, you could harm me, punch me, hurt me, you know, challenge me, and all of those things, you know, would be energized in that conflict. And this, I'm going somewhere with this. So it's just because that's how I was trained. I was an athlete, and I think to forge through and have success in my career, there was some of that. I think overcoming some of the challenges I put in front of myself, there was some resilience that was built. And what is interesting is, you know, for a man like me, there's this machismo that builds up, and I watch all of those around me that I've worked with over time, and how they just embrace and hold on to kind of that adolescent mindset of that, you know, bravado and bravery, machismo, and all the stuff. And you know, how shameful it would be if we were ever in a moment of true emotion and care and love where we are touched by something deeply, a comment, a compliment, the realization that we've made a difference in someone else's life in some way. And it's in those moments, Tanya, where I've always been sensitive. And when my heart is touched like that, when my soul is gifted in that way, it's always been a joyful thing that I felt I had to hide. I am a person that will be moved to tears by people. And I used to hide that and apologize for it and never wanted to come out at the wrong moment. And where I am now is understanding that I've been denying myself the life's greatest moments because the winning, the getting, the moments of, you know, of pride or recognition or adulation, pale in the moments of someone saying, "You really made a difference for me today," and being vulnerable and being moved to tears and letting that emotion flow. It's just making me realize that every day we're presented with great gifts if we're just open to them.
You know what? I can really identify with that. And that's why I asked the question, really, because, for example, I'm just going to bring in a little just quick story because I want to go into your childhood. And the reason being is I'm really resonating with what you're saying. And it's making me think about, are you actually born an activist? And I feel you could be. I don't know if you agree with that, like in terms of an activist in a positive sense, in terms of somebody that sees injustice and just their soul can't stand to see it and they have mm-hmm. to do something about it. And I'm just going to put in a little bit of myself in that. As when I was a child, there was a little girl that was teased at school and because of her eczema, because it was really bad. And I remember one day just literally slapping this other boy in the face, and I was only a kid. Because he was teasing her so much and he was so cruel to her. And I just became her protector because people teased her all the time because of her eczema. And she became a really good friend of mine. And some of the cool kids were always like, "Tanya, why is this particular little girl," I'm not going to mention her name because I don't think that's fair, was always hanging around me. But it's, you just become a protector. But that just proves as a child, you see that injustice and you react to that. And it could be something that is within you. And it sounds to me, when I asked that question, what challenges you? And you said, you know, you've gone through lots. You've had to recharge your battery. You said that you can be energized in conflict. You can be, you said as well, you know, in the past. And you've been really resilient in terms of what's been thrown at you. Does it come from somewhere? I suppose I'm asking that question. Does that come from somewhere? Does that activism comes from somewhere? And to go deeper, I think more than answer that question, I have to go back to Mike Vacanti as a child. And what did you really enjoy doing as a child? Or is there anything you want to share with me from being a child where you kind of recognize that in yourself?
Well, I love this exploration, and so I'm bringing myself back and thinking through that. You know, certainly I don't believe it was conscious at that point, but Tanya, as you're having me reflect back on those times, you know, maybe sometimes we don't recognize in ourselves what others can see. And I think back of being in the eighth grade and having one of my teachers pull me aside after she had witnessed my interaction with, you know, a big group of people. And she said, "Mike, in eighth grade, right? We're just all trying to, as eighth grade, you know, children or boys at that time, you know, we're all trying to find our place. And, you know, those are big discovery years." But she pulled me aside and said, "You have a gift and I want you to understand it." She said, "You don't conform to any one group. You relate to every different person, and you don't, you know, so I don't fall into a clique. I don't isolate or identify with one particular little group of people and try to be that. What she was telling me is that that I engaged with everybody equally, and that she saw that, you know, I mean, I was a big, strong kid. I was an athlete, and you know, I could be loud, and I got good grades, and I was very fortunate that way, but I didn't realize that I was so open that I spread that around, and a lot of it was protecting other kids. So I was the person in class that if somebody was being picked on by the teacher, I would stand up in the room and ask the teacher to stop. And so, you know, there was this, perhaps a little bit of a disregard for authority. And maybe that's been a challenge that's carried throughout my life. But I remember many, many instances where I was the protector from kids being bullied. And sometimes those bullies were people that I hung out with, and they were my friends. And mm-hmm. so there was never a thought of betrayal of friendship to take care of somebody that, you know, was struggling to stand up or take care for themselves. And the good news is I generally could win all those battles. So I was a good protector.
No, that's good. That's good. I think when the intention's there, you do, don't you? The intention gets even stronger than the force, doesn't it? When your intention is love, you know, and that sometimes does outweigh it. I want to have a look now, because I'm excited. I said I was wanting to talk to you the fact, you know, you were coming from an Italian family, growing up in the States. What were the challenges there, or did you face any challenges there? Were you picked on for being Italian? Was there anything there that within that community that you may have experienced?
You know, not me personally, but I did get to understand, you know, the challenges from my grandfather. Mm. And, you know, I'll talk about my father a little bit. Rest in peace. He died 3 years ago now.
Oh gosh, sorry. Wow.
And we ended up with a great relationship. But you know, there was always this chip on his shoulder because he certainly felt it. You know, he felt the never enough. My grandmother didn't work out of the home, but, you know, baked wedding cakes and served meals at the church. And my grandfather, you know, worked at the postal service and painted houses on the weekend. As a family, you know, they were very modest and they struggled. And I think that, lack of self-worth really landed on my father, and I kind of watched him operate and, you know, spend so many years of his life trying to disprove that. Mm. And so I think some of that falls onto me, and I've had to learn where those tendencies are and to understand them. So they don't become barriers as I was raising my five children who are all grown now. Mm-hmm. I didn't experience any of that personally, but you know, back in those days, back in the 40s and the 50s, there was isolation to groups of heritage. So, you know, the Italians were very diminished in a predominantly German and Scandinavian community that we existed in. And You know, a funny story to that is growing up, because my grandmother and grandfather spoke Italian, and you know, we'd be there for holidays or family meals, and then we would, you know, my mother was from a Scandinavian side of the family, and just, you know, the Italians were you know, a little bit more emotional and louder, and yeah. And the joke I always tell from that, Tanya, is I grew up thinking that Italian was the loudest language on the planet. Because we all spoke English except for, you know, at the dinner table, my grandma and grandpa on the opposite ends of the table, if they were having a disagreement, they would start speaking in Italian, and it was generally in loud voices.
Brilliant. So. I love the passion, actually. I really identify, one of my closest friends is Italian, actually. I really identify being West Indian. I think there's a similarity in terms of the culture you mentioned of the emotion. And I do love that emotion. I do love that loudness. And I do love that warmth as well. I do find that with Italian families, there's a real warmth there. And they definitely know how to set a table and to, as we would say in the West Indies, throw down, which means, you know, they will put a decent, like, loads of food on the table. There's, you know, it's plentiful. There's enough for everybody. And I think that's just coming from such a rich space in terms of being able to sit at the dinner table with lots of food, lots of warmth, lots of love, and family being really important. I definitely see that. I don't know if it's a stereotype, but I definitely see that in Italian families and love that kind of energy, which isn't in every culture. So that, I think that's really, really lovely. And I was just picking up on the vacanti, and I was thinking, I wonder if it's Italian, but I wonder where in Italy, and because you never can make an assumption, you always have to ask the questions because you never know, you know. So I think it's important to ask, but thank you for sharing that with me. And yeah. That's really lovely. And moving forward, because I want to get the Mike Vacanti story that nobody gets. I think that's important as well. Because what I'm getting is that you're hardworking and that you thrive and you push forward, and you know, you were a protector, and you know, you really connected with people at school, and you still do that now. So what is your vision for the future? For Mike Vacanti's future.
Yeah. Thank you. I really do think we have an opportunity all together, those that want to step in, to create significant change that will be more sustainable and more desirable than the patterns that we operate our business and our communities with today. And that is based around a belief in unity and support rather than division and gain and better than recognition. And there's so many layers to that, Tanya, that I hope I'm expressing in a way that's understandable. But in the way that we conduct business, being respectful of the environment, and to, I think, stop leveraging future generations for today's comforts is within our grasp. Yeah. But we have to stop doing so many destructive things now. And I think one of the destructive things we do is we isolate from others, we separate and we judge. And it is all based on that conquering mentality that we no longer need to survive.
Yes.
But we refuse to shed because there's adulation and financial reward and momentary satisfaction that we often strive for rather than having the perspective of long-term gains. We feed the flesh and we don't feed the soul.
You know what? really strong. I mean, what I'm hearing, and I'll say what I'm hearing in terms of, as I'm rolling that all into one, is a diverse world of love, action, where people stand together. That's what I'm hearing. Is that correct in terms of me tying everything that you've said together? Would you say that's correct?
It is correct, Tanya. And you know, it's so funny to hear those words play back. And thank you for that. Because it's hard even to sometimes remind myself that that is a true belief.
Mm.
That, you know, all indications would say, you know, that is, that's nice, Mike, but that's not really possible. Mm. And who are you to change the world? Or who are you to suggest that we need these changes? And what I believe and what I've spent time with now over the last 4 years, Tanya, is really doing the research of where these opportunities exist of making those changes so we can identify them and put real plans against them. And then also realizing that there's no way I could possibly affect that change on my own.
Mm. Yeah, and of course. That's right.
No choice. All that I do with my book, Believership, and what I'm doing with the, you know, year and a half that I've donated of my life to hopefully nourish and encourage people coming together under Humans First and together discovering and creating what that really is and what we believe together. It's all in the sense of it takes all of us to move forward. Mm-hmm. And we're up against significant change, and we're up against centuries of behavior challenges.
Mm.
And so bringing as many of us together that have a belief in creating a better today and a better future, and allowing each person to have a strong and equal voice, to be able to hear and learn from each other with the sole intent of lifting others along the journey with us, not winning the race, but proceeding forward together is truly possible when we talk about hundreds and then thousands of people that are finding each other and identifying with that belief.
Mm. You, I think, you know what, that, I feel that rolls everything you say into one in terms of finding the people that you can identify with, finding your tribe, because it's interesting you said that some people, you know, have not understood what you've been saying in terms of that love, is that possible? But if you believe it's possible and other people in the world believe it's possible, that's how the action comes. When you come together and start that action, that's how I feel like your book, Believership, and Humans First, I feel it can happen because you believe it. And at least, I suppose, we can go through this lifetime, or you can go through this lifetime with that belief system, and people will remember you for doing that. And I feel that there's probably many people out there who are inspired by that love and that action and that willingness for positive change. But who inspires you, Mike? That's how I'm going to wrap it up today.
Yeah, you know what's interesting is what I've realized is I've felt that I need to reach out to, you know, some iconic figure and say that's where I have my inspiration, and what I've realized is I've sought that. So when that question was asked, Tanya, I would have an answer. And what I realize is, like, this conversation inspires me. Those that stand up for another, those that continue to return to conversations and are truly willing to invest themselves in showing up with the intent of helping. I'm inspired by everyday people.
Beautiful.
That I get a chance to meet. And that's kind of become the real gift, because those are the touch points inside that keep my light burning. And I spend more time in meditation. I spend more time, you know, quietly reading and challenging myself, because it's those touch points to the soul, really. It's that keep my light lit, that keep my fire burning. And it's those I get to touch most closely.
Yeah.
And when I say touch, you know, certainly a hug, because that's a wonderful gift. But, you know, in conversation and in sharing ideas, in being vulnerable, in expressing emotions, you know, touched in that way.
You know what? Thank you so much, Mike. And I'm going to end the show by saying what you just said, because that love for the touch points that keeps your fire burning. I love that. And I may even have to use that. I might have to call it, what are the touch points that keep your fire burning, eh? I really love that. Thank you so much, Mike. I'm going to bring it to a close now. I found that conversation being really inspirational, just talking to you and your energy and your calmness and just your ability to articulate what it is, what your vision in the world is was really lovely. So thank you for sharing this space with me for this conversation. And I'm going to say, from Tanya the Communication Doctor and from Mike Vacanti, adios.
Thank you, Tanya.
I have to just breathe. One of my takeaways from this show was to fully charge your battery so you have the stamina to create positive change. I also love the analogy of a vision of diversity, love and action, of people standing together to create this positive change. And the fact that Mike Vacanti is inspired by real people and the people that are around him. What a great show. Thanks so much for listening.
Thank you for listening. If you would like to learn more, please visit our website at communicationdoctor.co.uk. To listen to more real stories, don't forget to subscribe.